Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome to the Brad Sessmatt Show. Yep, the Skyview Studios. They are lovely here. But this is, of course, not Brad Sessmatt. Paula Bovin, Greg Esposito, Sun's senior digital manager, as you mentioned, kind of the all-Italian version of the Brad Sessmatt Show.
It is, and we both have hair, so that's totally different for the viewers. I always got to get that dig in when Brad's not here.
Well, of course.
I need Brad's vacation schedule, too. I got to become the CEO of something or the host of something so I can get a better vacation schedule.
I don't know if your Italian thing, it's a stereotype, but for me, it's true. I totally talk with my hands. Do you do that?
So I do.
I'll try not to smack you in the head more than normal that I would.
So. And I enjoy Italian food, too. So, yeah, I'm pretty much the stereotypical guy. I never played a super plumber, though. I wasn't Super Mario Brothers.
But
other than that, I fit all the other Italian stereotypes.
Well, that's good. It's a good thing. All right, we are not going to talk about Italy, of course, all day today. Boy, we were talking off the air. A lot of things have kind of worked us up, so we're going to get into that in just a minute. And also, earlier this morning, I had a chance to talk with Earl Watson, the interim coach of the Suns, and this guy really impresses me. So look forward to sharing that interview. And we also have Bill Goodykoons coming up of the AZ Central talking about movies. There is a Super Bowl this weekend. I know a lot of people are talking about the Panthers, Broncos. I'll get your pick in a little bit. But, man, one of the things that people are buzzing about, Espo, is what Charles Barkley did last night on TNT. He ripped the Suns, blasted them, made fun of them, said what a disaster it is, said what the nachos are even bad at the arena. You know, we're not hiding the fact that you're a Suns employee.
No.
But I imagine you have a feeling about what he did.
Yeah, let's take a listen to it first, and I'll give you my reaction.
Hey, tell you what, who's one of the great guys out there, worked for the Suns, Eddie Johnson, one of my good friends.
There's Corey Brewer, by the way.
These guys, man, I feel so bad. They just threw Jeff Hornacek under the bus, ran over him. Hang in there, Jeff. You'll get another chance with a real NBA team.
Oh, my goodness.
Man. Oh, my gosh.
And the rant goes on. And look at Trevor Ariza.
Look at them empty seats, man. The best fans in the world get to watch this trash.
77-66.
Now the guys are trash. Come on, man.
They got a bunch of injuries. Their top three scorers all out.
They were no good when they had them.
Man, I'm trying.
Hey, Chuck, how's the popcorn in the arena?
Burza Teletovic.
Stale popcorn. Come on.
But look what the Suns do. They come back with a 10-0 run.
Oh, they came back, Chuck.
To take the lid.
How's the hot dogs, Chuck? How's the hot dogs? Yeah, they got that old hard bun.
Hard.
All the soda's flat. Oh, man, it's terrible out there.
It's awful.
Oh, man.
The beer's flat, Kenny.
Oh, no.
Houston winds up with a 20-10 run.
Oh, my goodness. So why did you get all excited when they made that run? I mean, you know they're going to lose. I've seen this movie.
Just reporting the facts. What about the pretzels, Chuck?
Oh, those pretzels are hard as a rock. It's a great adventure.
And what about the nachos?
Oh, my God. The cheese is cold.
Wow. Flat beer, cold cheese, bad team. Questionable ownership. He went off on the team. He went off, and that was a long rant.
Well, look, I know that people will say, okay, we know who you're employed by, so that skews your opinion. But I've been a Suns fan since I was 5 years old. So it's coming from this part. And it pains me to have to say this because Charles Barkley was the guy that I loved most growing up. But you know how easy it is to kick somebody when they're down? It's a bully mentality. There's no real reason to kick somebody when they're down like this. Did the Suns do it or fans do it when Charles Barkley threw a guy through a plate glass window? I don't remember that. I think they pretty much stuck by him. You know, when he gets a DUI, is there anything like that? No, you have to have some class in these situations. And he's making fun of guys that are going out there and playing their best in turn, because you look at the injuries on this team. You're missing your starting backcourt, so you're playing a 21-year-old in Archie Goodwin who's never played point guard before at point guard, and you got Devin Booker at 19 who's going out there. The two of those guys are playing their hearts out and playing very well. Then you go into a rant about the arena, and I know he's trying to be funny, but now you're making fun of things that A, aren't true, and B, you've got people working really hard behind the scenes to try to make things the best they possibly can, and on national TV, he's going out there and throwing people under the bus. I have a problem with it from the standpoint of It's super easy to kick people when they're down, and it's kind of a cop-out. You have legitimate critiques, make them. That's what you're paid for. But, you know, I get everything's and we're going to get into this a lot today. Everything's, you know, entertainment now and sensationalized, but I felt that was kind of childish from a guy that I expected a little bit more. Maybe I shouldn't expect a little bit more from Charles Barkley. And usually I find the show very entertaining. They're usually pretty funny. They usually don't go that childish or that mean-spirited, but I thought it was a little uncalled for. Is it a rough season? Yes. No denying that. Is it much lower than everybody expected? Yeah. Are people frustrated? Myself included, yes. I'm frustrated even in the building. But I just felt this crossed a line of good taste, that there was really no reason to go that way, especially from a guy who's in the Ring of Honor, who's one of the all-time greats for the franchise. And to go on a weird rant like that just bothered me.
That's Greg Esposito, Senior Digital Manager for the Suns. And I watched that and I chuckled a bit and I wasn't that bothered by it. And I think it is partly a product of you're someone who is inside that mm-hmm. organization. So you know and see the people that may be impacted by his comments. I will be honest, I saw it and I kind of laughed and I thought, well, this organization is in bad shape right now. You know, the turnover, firing the coach. A lot of people didn't think the coach should be fired. Some of the effort of some of the players. I think there's great effort by a lot of them. Turnover, the injuries, everything else. I didn't take it as hard. But as we were talking off the air before, there's a difference sort of when you're, you know, embedded with an organization. You see some of the parts and how the moving parts.
Well, look, there's people. We forget that in this industry and a lot of things, even in the way we cover it. There's people involved in all this. These players are normal human beings like the rest of us. People in the front office, the people that work hard day to day to put on a game are people, and they have feelings, they have emotions, they go through everything that you do in your job. So yeah, I'm probably too close to it to take it as the jest that it was supposed to be, but there's a lot of hard work that still goes on to it. And like I said, I'm not hiding the fact that this has been quite frankly a bad season.
Sure.
It's been bad across the board. It's been tough for everybody, fans and employees alike, but I felt it crossed that line of good taste personally.
I think it did too in a small sense, but I think for the most part, I think most people watching took it as entertainment, that the old, that's just Charles being Charles. You know, he went to the nachos, he went to the beer, he went to all those other things, and it was clearly to get a laugh out of people. So we may not agree on this one, Espo, but I think we will definitely agree on this next topic. And this thing really ticked me off, and it's been a while since something worked me up. If you did not see this, there is a show on Fox Sports 1 called Whitlock's House Party by the Bay, and it seems right now I think it's temporary.
I think it's a Super Bowl week kind of show.
And so there is Jason Whitlock, a longtime sports writer, a very good writer, and his co-host, who is Julie Stewart Binks. And during the show, she suggested basically that Rob Gronkowski, a former U of A guy and great NFL entertainer as well as great football player, you know, do his best Magic Mike impersonation and give her a lap dance. And that's what happened on the show. And so this video went viral, understandably, and a lot of the comments were ha, ha, ha. But frankly, I was offended by her because this is someone who also is a commentator, Women's World Cup, does some sort of sideline reporting for hockey, has done a very good job in those roles. But I think she is just making it bad for the rest of sports journalists, female sports journalists, by doing that. And I was really annoyed by it.
This goes a step beyond that even for me. Why is this what sports talk and sports television is turning into? Right. Why are we pandering to the lowest common denominator and trying to make everything sensationalized? I get it that Fox Sports 1 just brought Jamie Horowitz over from ESPN, who was the mastermind behind First Take, brought in the Let's Go Shift Gears to Debate. I just heard earlier this week that Fox Sports 1 is now doing away with Fox Sports Live, which was their Sports Center type show, so they're going to have no news element. They just brought in TMZ Sports as another show. I like a lot of the people that work over there. I know a lot of people behind the scenes at Fox Sports 1. I have a great deal of respect for them, but I don't know why this is the path that we feel we have to go down. And I understand right now everything's about being sensational. Can you find a way to get page views? And can you find a way to move that needle on ratings slightly? But I think it's a flawed way to look at things. And at some point, this rubber band's going to snap back, and we're going to have to actually look at civil discourse and a way to really have good conversations about these things. I get sports is entertainment in the end, but do we really have to turn it down to a NFL tight end giving a female reporter a lap dance? And this is one of the biggest stories coming out of Super Bowl week. It angers me to no point that this is what a business that a lot of us have worked very hard to try to get into or build a career such as yourself, that this is now what it's doing. It's all turning into aggregation of other people's work that and just weird things that make sensational headlines. They're taking small quotes out of longer things, taking them out of context and turning them into these big things that cause a stir on Twitter and the internet. It drives me nuts.
But this is the biggest challenge facing sports programming right now, because it is so much like on social media, it's about the hits and the numbers and page views and everything else. On television, it's your ratings. And you have to weigh that. My point has always been, you can still find good programming that can get good ratings. You look at some of the work that ESPN has done with their films, mm-hmm. and their Bob Lee, his show. I'm totally blanking.
Outside the lines.
They've got great reporting on there. They get good numbers. It's good journalism. You can find a way to get numbers without doing this. And I said it before. I think Julie Stewart Binks is hurting the profession of women in sports journalism. And you know, I've started teaching a class at the Cronkite School at ASU. It's grad students, and there are women. And this is Monday. This is the first video I'm going to show them about what you shouldn't make your career go, because it is embarrassing to this field.
Well, and entertainment is all right. I came up as somebody that wrote in more of an entertainment forum. I don't have a journalism background. I didn't go to journalism school. I actually went to the same school, unfortunately, that Rob Gronkowski went to. I'm a little embarrassed right now to admit that. But, you know, entertainment's all right. But part of the problem is page views and internet metrics and TV ratings are a flawed system. They're not an accurate portrayal of who's really looking at content. Time on site's I'm getting a little inside
That's
baseball,
right,
but time on site's a better way to look at how good content is. If somebody's actually reading through everything, they're going to spend more time on your site. You know, Nielsen ratings are flawed to no end, both on the radio and television side. You're not getting an accurate picture. And at what point do we go, you know what? I don't need the biggest number. I need the most loyal audience. I think that's a bigger key than the biggest number. And I think we're seeing that in specialized podcasts, different things that are going on in the industry. But it scares me that we're basically being lazy in the fact that you're doing things like this on television, where yes, a Bob Lee or a documentary gets good ratings, but that takes time and effort. Something like Jason Whitlock's House Party by the Bay doesn't take any effort. You throw some red Solo cups on the table and you let Julie Stewart Binks get a lap dance, and all of a sudden, hey, we got ratings. It's ridiculous.
It really comes down to, there is such a gray area now, right now, with sports broadcasting as far as reporting of journalism versus entertainment. And if you want to be an entertainment entity, just be that. Don't try to confuse the line. Frankly, I've seen it even with local television during this Cardinals run. It's all rah-rah, you know, wearing Cardinals jerseys when reporting the sports. It's just decide what you want to be and be that. Be an entertainer or be a journalist, but you can't be both. Oh my God, we got worked up today. Maybe Earl Watson will calm us down a little bit.
He has that effect on people.
He's got that effect on people. This is the Brad Sesmet Show. Paula Bovin, Greg Esposito filling in for Brad here on sports360az.com. Stay tuned. We are going to talk to the Suns interim coach in just a second. Welcome back to the show here on Sports 360 AZ. And I am excited to welcome, right now he's the interim coach of the Suns. We'll see where that leads, but I want to welcome here Earl Watson. Earl, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me.
Oh, glad to have you on. You know, what is it like to be the guy that for quite a while now has been offering opinions and sharing opinions to the head coach and now sort of making those decisions? Is it scary? Is it great? How would you define it?
It just is.
Right.
I think we have a group of coaches who want to become teachers. And I can't say this enough. Coach Hornacek laid an amazing foundation to continue to build on top of. In this business, it's very unfortunate when careers change and people and coaches and players go different directions, general managers. It happens. It's a part of the business. So you embrace it. At the same time, you try to gather the group to come together as a family, build a family, and push forward.
And you mentioned earlier your friendship with Coach Hornacek, and I know you guys seem to have a real connection. I was sort of curious why that was. Did you share similar philosophies? And also, what was sort of the conversations that you had, if you had, with him when this all happened and came down?
I think what we're trying to create here today is similar to the type of relationships we had in the last couple stops of my career in Utah with Coach Sloan. So I met Coach Hornacek in Utah. He was my coach, actually, my assistant. Of course, he had a great run there with the teams there, and it's the ultimate respect. So whenever you play for the Jazz, Coach Sloan just commanded and demanded this respect for the past players, to be selfless to them, to respect them, to uplift them, to admire them, and actually want to be like them. So going into the process of interviewing for this job, I had to call Coach Hornacek before I even took the interview to see if he was okay with it. And if he wasn't, then it's a decision I have to make. I believe relationships are more important than opportunity to just walk away from it.
And what did he say when you called?
He told me it's hard to pass up your first opportunity in the NBA as a head coach. You know, we all know it's a coveted position. It's not a lot of positions, and it's rare. And if you have the opportunity to take it, he said, I could never tell you not to take it. But it was just a lot.
You know, Earl,
attitude of gratitude.
Excuse me. There seems to be so much of a sort of a divisive feeling with Markieff Morris, and I certainly have been that person. I've written that I'm sort of the biggest media pushover around, and I love the thought of giving Markieff chances, but it came to a point where I felt like the Suns community, the fan base, was really frustrated with where that relationship with the team had gone. You seem to have a real belief in him, and obviously he's a great player. I wonder if you could kind of explain where your relationship is with him now and talk about Markieff, the basketball player.
Coming into the situation this summer, I think that's when all the fans pretty much had their frustration. I signed here in late June, so I walked into the middle of that frustration. So I kind of understood it. I didn't know him. I never met him. I've only seen him around, played against him, obviously. So I was kind of similar with the fans. I think we were all frustrated with the lack of communication, lack of transparency to see where the relationship was going. Getting to know him, I think when you step back and you look at it, he's 25, 26 years old. And Coach Wooden has always told me that you have to, when you coach a team, you teach a team. When you teach a team, you teach life. And he told me to always embrace those who have the most adversity. For him, he said it was Bill Walton. And in this situation, I guess it is Markieff. So Markieff, the basketball player that you've seen the last couple of games, that I've seen in practice over the last couple of days or so, has taken steps forward to not only have accountability, but have transparency to love and want to play for this team, play for this organization, play for this program, and be a part of the process.
There's so, you know, I was just telling somebody the other day when Jeff lost his job, I couldn't believe there were only six or seven other coaches in the NBA who had been in the job longer than he had. It is a tough business to survive this. And I think a lot of times success hinges on a coach's ability to get his message to players. Where do you feel like you are in that arena as far as your relationship with players? Is that something you have felt would be a strength, or is it something you're still kind of learning? How would you define it?
I think my relationship with players is the key to, I always believe, is don't approach it through basketball. Basketball is already so stressful. It's watched by millions of people. The job is scrutinized every day because we have no chance to make mistakes and cover them up and then deliver the final project. So you approach relationships beyond basketball. Once you can reach them beyond the game, you find their likes, their interests, even to the details of their favorite food or what they like to do. You can develop relationships of communication that is safe. When you get onto the court, they trust you. Once they trust you, then you can start to hold them more accountable, maybe be more aggressive with your words, or sometimes just nurture them and walk them through it.
We're speaking with Suns interim coach Earl Watson, and that's so interesting what you just said, because that led me to a question about Coach Wooden, and you mentioned him a little bit earlier. Obviously, his great success on the court, all the W's, the wins, experience, is what has made him so popular, so great. But about the communication part of it, I mean, I hear people quote him all the time, his sayings. What was it about him that made him able to get the message across to players? Because it seems like there's such a great lesson there.
I got that from Coach Witten exactly. Like, when Coach Witten was at UCLA, of course, he was retired when I was there, but he came to every game, came to almost a couple of practices a week, and I took my responsibility of getting to know him even further. And I went into his home, and I went into his condo. We had lots of talks. And the thing about Coach Witten is he never spoke about basketball. He only spoke about life, love, nurturing, teaching, the journey, maturing, becoming accountable, being better than just a basketball player, being more than just a basketball player, the community. How do you give back? How do you serve? How do you inspire? So Coach Witten, greatest, I think, conversation I ever had with him that stuck with me the most, he said, belief is stronger than reality. He always told his team they were the best executing team, transition team, defensive team, best in shape team. And then he looks at me and smiles and winks at me. He said, I didn't even know if that was true, but they believed me.
That's great. Great words of wisdom. You know, and I wanted to share this sort of a personal story because my late father-in-law was a great man, but he was slow to come by with compliments for people and certainly with athletes. He had mentioned in the past that you were his favorite player of all time. And one of the reasons, I think, was because of the way you played defense and also how team sort of oriented you were. And it was funny, I was listening to the radio the other day and I heard another coach say the same thing about you. And I'm wondering, what was it about your playing days, do you think, that people from afar related to you?
I think maybe because the truth is the greatest teams and the greatest programs and family of players that people love to watch is a group of players who don't care who gets the credit. They really love the guy next to them. They are a Krebs cycle. The cycle never breaks. It's constant love, constant give, constant selflessness. And when you take over situations, and we're taking over a situation where we have to build love. And I've been in the NBA. I played for 13 years. It's my second year. Last year I was with the Spurs, and I learned a lot just coaching and mentoring and helping recruit in free agents for them and putting together pitch programs. Is you have to build love. And in locker rooms, love is never talked about. It's the most masculine man in the world that are athletic and multi-millionaires. You have to build it.
You're obviously going to have some challenges with this team. You've got a couple point guards who aren't playing. What are you looking for? Are you looking for wins? Are you looking for certain styles of play? What are you hoping to find right now?
Right now, we're looking to build positive habits, inspirational play, motivation. When you see our team play, we want you to say they fight every night, they give their heart, and you can fall in love with that. Once that process continues to build and we get our guys back who are key offensive factors in our team and key players, the guys who will go back to the bench now have the ultimate confidence. And if you watch San Antonio play, Pop will pick games where he sits his starters. The media goes crazy.
Right.
But what Pop is really doing, he's building their confidence for the playoffs. He's building the bench confidence to come in when they're down six in the Western Conference Finals and go on a 10-0 run to get the starters back into the game. He's very strategic. I learned a lot from San Antonio. So we're building that right now in a different way, different manner, different process, but it has to be built.
Sounds like you've had some great mentors along the way, Earl. I appreciate you coming on the radio and on the show, and I really appreciate you talking to us, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Oh, hopefully. Look forward to talk to you soon. Thanks.
Thank you. That is Suns interim coach, Earl Watson, and we'll be back shortly.
Welcome back into the Brad Sesmatt Show. I am neither Brad nor Sesmatt. I am Greg Esposito. She is Paula Bovin of AZ Central Sports, and it always takes two people to fill in for the big guy when he's not around. And I'm glad he asked us today, Paula. Always a privilege to work with you on the show. We've already talked some controversial topics, and I think we're going to get into another one here, as Johnny Manziel is no stranger to controversy, and he finds himself in it again. And for the first time, I think I'm actually finding him to kind of a sympathetic character, because I'm starting to feel like this is something bigger than him that is going on. And first off, it started, and this isn't the part that I feel sympathetic towards, it started with a domestic violence issue with his girlfriend. There was a report that came out Saturday that he reportedly struck her. And then the report came out earlier today that he has since refused to go into rehab two separate times. And his father came out and said he's afraid that Johnny won't make it to his 24th birthday if he doesn't get help soon.
You know, and it's interesting you said that about the sympathetic figure, because that is also sort of the first time I had that feeling about him, because his dad mentioned that he's trying to get his son admitted to a psychiatric and chemical hospital, which implies, and maybe not, but he either feels there is a, you know, an emotional kind of problem going on in addition to maybe some kind of a dependency issue. And that's scary. I had somebody, and this has been about 10 years ago, come stay with me at my house that I was not aware was bipolar. And this person was fine for a few days. And then, and I'm not saying this is Johnny Manziel's situation, but if there is any kind of issue, for 3 days, this person stayed with me and everything was fine. And then he suddenly stopped taking meds I didn't know he was taking. And he was driving from Phoenix up to Northern California to Los Angeles and just driving back and forth. Mm-hmm. And then he was in front of a governmental building yelling stuff at him. And this is a really bright guy who I worked with many years ago. And so that stuff is scary, and that his dad is concerned that there is something going on in that regard makes me worry in very strong ways for Johnny Manziel. And so it's not just about football with him anymore.
Well, look, I'll get personal here. I've suffered through depression. It's very difficult to go through, and I don't think people realize how serious it is.
Sure.
It isn't just sadness. It's a way that skews every form of your thinking and affects things. And then there's been alcoholism that I've witnessed around me in my life, and these things change people. They take hold of people. And if that's really what's going on with Johnny Manziel, I feel bad that he hasn't hit the point where he realizes he needs that help. Because if his own father is saying that this has hit a point where he may not be alive within the year, that's saying something. This goes well beyond a football career or some, you know, ridiculous guy that goes to Vegas. It goes way beyond all the sensationalization that's gone on with Johnny Manziel. This comes down to a guy in dire need of help. And I kind of wonder, is he a byproduct of an athletic system now that starts when these guys are so young that they get coddled, that they get told they're the greatest thing in the world, and maybe substance abuse issues or mental issues get overlooked because all these people seem to care about is making a great football player and a brand at times. I feel he may have fallen victim to that and fallen victim to this kind of system that we all basically embrace right now.
What bothers me, and I think you're alluding to this a little bit, I think even now he has some kind of posse-like group around mm-hmm. him. There are quote-unquote friends that are, you know, encouraging him to go to Vegas. There's always people around him, and these are not people that are helping him in any way, shape, or form. And I don't know who they are, but some of the same people have shown up in pictures. And I feel like that Lisa, these are not real friends if they're sort of steering him in that direction. So there are, I think, a lot of people that are sort of culpable and helping this along, and they need to look at themselves too. And I sure hope this story has a different ending than the one it seems to be leading to.
Well, you know, honestly, the thing that worries me as well is I think the worst thing that could possibly happen for him is if he gets his wish to go to, like, the Dallas Cowboys, a place where excess is mm-hmm. everything at times, it seems like, that they've, you know, Jerry Jones in the past has condoned some behavior that has been questioned. I mean, look at the teams with Michael Irvin and all the stuff that went on with the White House back in the day. Like, we're not talking the home of the president either. Go
right.
Look it up if you don't know
yeah.
what I'm talking about. But I think that's a scary aspect to this too. And I hope people want to see Johnny Manziel, the person, get better and stop worrying about Johnny Manziel, the football player. Can he get his delivery right or anything? Because none of that's going to matter if he doesn't get his life in order.
It is so hard to make it to the point of being able to play quarterback in the NFL. You know, you look at the quarterbacks between Kurt Warner and Carson Palmer at the Cardinals. I mean,
you're using that term quarterback loosely,
exactly.
But I understand.
But if he gets help, if he is remorseful, This guy could turn his life around. We talk about all the time on the show. People are so forgiving, and I am the leader of the pack. If you show remorse in something, talk about a guy who could really turn things around. He'd probably get another shot, but he has never shown, and I don't know if people have talked about it being part of a privileged upbringing. I don't know enough about that, but there never seems to be real remorse with him, and that's scary.
Well, and it's sad to ever see these guys with immense immense talent in an area that many people would, give up everything in their life to be able to do, wasted away. And we've seen it in this town. Darryl Washington comes to mind. Richard Dumas, even further back, that they have all the talent in the world and they just can't put it together. And it is tragic. I mean, that's the best word that comes to mind to describe it. And it's disgusting that it gets to a point where he's physically assaulting a girlfriend, and that's when we decide, hey, maybe it's time to get Johnny Manziel help. Maybe it was time to get Johnny Manziel help in college when he was doing some of these things. Maybe it was time to get Johnny Manziel help when he was in a swimming pool floating on a giant inflatable swan with a giant bottle of champagne. Like, maybe that's when you have to take a long, hard look at somebody and say, yeah, I get your celebrity. You're famous. You're a guy that's going to make us a lot of money, but you're a person. Get some help. And we need to start doing this. We need to take a long, hard look at athletes, especially if you're in the inner circle, because you're right. There's a lot of people that are hangers-on, that are enablers of this kind of behavior because they think it's the life these guys should lead because they're rich. Well, it's not. You got to take a long, hard look, and I hope somebody helps Johnny Manziel be able to look in the mirror and figure it out.
If you haven't, go online and read about the police report. People have posted it, and it's scary because it's not about simply two people arguing in a car, which is sort of what was presented initially when the story came out. It's about, she said she was struck several times. It was about him saying, you come with me or I'm going to kill both of us. It was her telling a valet at whatever place they were, I'm afraid to go with this guy. Please don't make me go with this guy. And the valet standing there saying, I really don't know what to do. I mean, there's some really disturbing information in there. And I think it's important if you're going to pass judgment to sort of look at what's going on with this guy. And as we mentioned, I think it's deeper than a guy who just likes to drink a lot.
Yeah, and the comment that I'll kill both of us is probably that sign that there's something. I mean, all of it is a sign, but that one right there stands out to me that there's something much, much deeper going on, and they've got to figure out how to fix that. And it comes up in a week where everything is amplified because this Super Bowl week and the media day and everything is some sensational story, and we talked about it in the first segment. I feel like I'm just standing on a very high soapbox today with all this stuff, but you know, I don't think we care to necessarily look at the element. The headline, the 140 characters that grabs people's attention is Johnny Manziel struck his girlfriend, and then Johnny Manziel's father says he might be dead in a year. Like, and nobody cares to look deeper than that because, well, we know enough to pass judgment at that point, and so be it. I'm good now. I know everything I need to know about.
Somebody was telling me, and you may have more information because of your social media background, that often when people retweet links of stories and comment, oh, this is terrible, they actually have never clicked open the story. Only a small percentage of people actually read the story, right? Yeah.
Do you remember the game Telephone from when you were a kid?
Oh, absolutely.
That's what social media is. These things spread so fast and get passed along, and it gets skewed and morphed, and every time it gets aggregated, the headline becomes a little bit more sensationalized, and all of a sudden, we get this thing that really isn't the story. It really isn't anything. It's one small piece, and you know this. And when you write a large story, lots of quotes, a good research into it, if you take one sentence out of it, you can turn that into anything. It's not a real good indicator of what it is, but we get this game of telephone and people pass judgment and they think they know everything about a subject because they've read one tweet without clicking a link, without reading anything. And that's the society we happen to be in right now. Not everybody. There are level-headed people, but it's an easy way to create this anger. And it costs people jobs. it hurts people's livelihoods. We have a very mob mentality. It's like the villagers coming for Frankenstein with the lit torches, because
right.
They don't understand the real story behind it. They just see this is something awful to get outraged about. I'm going to go after him. She is Paula Bove, and I am Greg Esposito. You're listening to the Brad Sesmat Show here on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. We got a great guest coming up next, Bill Goodykoontz of the Arizona Republic. He is the film critic and media critic over there. We talked to him about the big Coen Brothers movie, Hail Caesar, coming up this weekend. He shares some great insight about it. That's coming up next here on the Brad Sesmat Show.
There is only one man in this community that gets that kind of introduction. And it is not my partner here in crime, Greg Esposito. It is Bill Goodykoontz, AZ Central, the man who reviews the movies and gives us his opinion. Goody, how you doing?
I'm good. I get that music. That's all I get.
Hey, now people don't need to know that. All right, I want to ask you something about a movie.
I'm in life. I didn't mean.
No. Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the big bucks that we pay you for this.
No.
I have to tell you a really quick anecdote, and I want to get into some of the movies that we're going to talk about. But I brought my 87-year-old mother to a movie. And I thought we were going to see The Room, because I thought that would have been an interesting movie that she would enjoy. But I got confused and thought a movie called The Boy was actually The Room. So I brought my elderly mom to The Boy. Have you seen either of those? It was like a horror movie.
I've seen Room, and it's fantastic. And it's kind of a horror movie in its own way, but much more psychological. But it's great. And it's nominated for Best Picture. And Brie Larson is the odds-on favorite to win Best Actress. And The Little Boy is fantastic. The Boy, I didn't see, but I have a lot of good friends who saw it. It's actually pretty terrible. It's just a horror movie. I did that once. I had to go to my now late mom was visiting a few years ago, and I knew I was going to have to go to a bunch of movies during the day, and I was going to have to take her. And one of them was, Kick-Ass. and it's like the most gleefully profane movie. I was just sitting there with my head in my hands. And afterwards, she said, I loved it.
Well, and that surprised me, too, with my mom. The Boy is, for people who haven't seen it, is a horror film. Basically, this nanny goes to the English countryside to babysit, take care of a kid, and it turns out to be basically a ventriloquist dummy, but it comes to life. And so, anyway, let's get to more important things. Hail Caesar, the great Coen brothers did this movie. Have you seen it yet? And what's your thoughts?
I have seen it, and I love the Coen brothers, but I did not love this. I liked it. It's one of those things where it's you try to go into a movie always just with a blank slate. I don't want to know too much about it. And it doesn't matter who's making it. It just has to stand on its own, da da da. But that's impossible. I mean, everybody brings something to everything they do. I mean, I was just wondering this before you guys called. If it wasn't the Coen brothers, would I have thought, wow, this thing is great? If Michael Bay made this, I would think this is the best Michael Bay movie that there ever been.
Yeah, but that could go for anything. I mean, that's not blowing up things, right?
Yeah. And I'm trying to think. I don't think anything blows up in this. The cast is fantastic. The acting is really good. The scenes by themselves are terrific. It's about making movies in the early 50s, and Josh Brolin is this kind of fixture for a studio, and he has to run from thing to thing and fix it. Like George Clooney is like the big dumb movie star in this biblical epic. I guess maybe he's like Charlton Heston or something. I don't know, but Charlton Heston was dumb, but he gets kidnapped. So they have to go, he has to figure that out. Scarlett Johansson is like a kind of an Esther Williams, like swimming star, and she's pregnant. And so she needs a husband. So he's got to figure that out. And just the things like that. Channing Tatum has something going. Channing Tatum though, I'll tell you this, he is in this scene where he's in kind of a song and dance movie, and he stops by and watches him, and he does this hilarious dance scene and sings, and he is fantastic. I mean, I knew that he could sing and dance, but the way he tap dances is unbelievable.
Well, you think of the bloodlines with him, right? I mean, there's all kinds of entertainers in that family, so.
Well, but then I read this thing with him about where he said, obviously he was a dancer, but he said he learned to tap for this movie. He said, oh, man, I'd do anything to be with the Coen brothers. And I think that's the kind of reputation they have, and deservedly so. I can't think of anybody who's made a string of better movies in the last 20 years. And I've talked to them a couple times, and they are really weird, just like everybody says they are, and they legitimately do. This is not an exaggeration. They do finish each other's sentences, and they are brilliant. But I just feel like they didn't. The story that strings these really good pieces together is not that good. I would still say see it. Just don't go in there thinking you're going to see The Big Lebowski or even Barton Fink or something like that. I mean, it's just not quite up to that level.
It's closer in the vein of The Big Lebowski than their other films like Fargo and No Country for Old Men, though, right?
Yeah, and you think about that, too, though. Think about the different kind of movies that these guys make. I think that when they make silly comedies, I'm trying to think of one, they don't always work that well. And I think sometimes when Clooney tries to be silly, he's not as good. I actually like him in this one. He was sort of a dope, but he wasn't over the top. And sometimes I think he just gets too goofy in these things. And I love George Clooney. I think I can recognize that he's a very handsome man, but he's also just a cool guy. I mean, he's like the guy that you'd want to have a beer with. And when I used to do TV, he used to come back sometimes to the TV tour that we'd go on, because now he's a big time movie star and he produced a lot of TV stuff. And the thing that was cool about him was somebody would ask a question of him, and before he would answer it, he had been in like 17 failed TV pilots, I guess, before ER. And he would say things like, oh, Ed Bark, hey, man, how's your daughter doing? And he was just the nicest guy. You know? And,
he's on the internet right now. He was on Jimmy Kimmel. I don't know if you saw it with the house. Yeah, they did the medical thing. It was hilarious. You know, talking to the actors. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, the funny thing about him on ER was supposedly that, you know, that ER, it seems kind of dated now, but at the time it was revolutionary. It doesn't seem fast now. It was lightning fast back then, and they were worried that people couldn't keep up. They also used medical jargon without explaining it and trusted the audience to kind of figure out what was going on in the context of things. But I guess it was hard to do that. Obviously, if you're an actor, you're not a doctor. You don't know what all that stuff means. And Clooney is famous for, like, if you ever see him, like, talking to somebody, feel like, fluff a pillow or fix a sheet or something, and he would hide his lines in there. And that, but so that he could, you know, I guess he's a hard worker, but I guess he didn't work real hard at memorizing the medical stuff.
Yeah, clearly, if he's stashing them in the pillows, that's very funny. We are talking to Bill Goodykoontz, talking movies. We're talking the actors in that movie, Hail Caesar. I know so many people, obviously, we're talking about Josh Brolin. A lot of my female friends love him, but a lot of guys I know just think Josh Brolin is the greatest thing on the theater and screen right now, the movie screen. What do you like about him? Why does he translate so well in these movies?
He's kind of a guy's guy. You
yeah.
Know? I mean, and it's interesting. It's not that Clooney isn't, but Josh Brolin has, I would say, kind of rougher edges, and you know, and it's not just a physical thing. It's the way he talks. It's in part the roles that he takes. And frankly, I mean, Clooney is, you know, always, you know, helping out in Darfur and all these things. Brolin, you don't know that much about. You know, you kind of just get what you get in the movies. At least I don't. I mean, I know his dad, James Brolin, but that, other than that, I just kind of see him when he shows up. And you know, I saw him walk down the street one time at the Toronto Film Festival, and he was a lot shorter than you think. But all these guys are
right.
Shorter than you think. But I mean, he wasn't like Tom Cruise or something. He didn't have to stand on a box. But he was just smiling. I mean, for some reason, he was laughing like crazy, just walking down the street. I don't know what was going on with him. But I think he's in some ways he's probably a little more relatable than Clooney. Like Clooney's almost too perfect, you know?
Right.
But you know, another thing, the thing about Clooney when he's standing there, like in this movie, his hair's gotten grayer, and believe me, I know this happens. Like the shape of his face has changed a little bit. He's looking really like Gary Cooper now. And I mean, I'm sorry, but like Clark, my favorite actor.
Well, you should remember his name then.
I should. Cary Grant.
Oh, there you go.
He's starting to look a lot like Cary Grant, I think. And that is not, by the way, a bad thing.
Let's shift gears to TV real quick.
I'm starting to look like Jonah Hill. So
I vacillate between Jonah Hill and skinny Jonah Hill every 6 or 7 months, so that's all right. I wanted to shift gears and ask you a little bit about television right now. One of the things I'm most fascinated with is the evolution of Fox Sports 1 and what's going on there. It seems like they're starting to shift to much more of a shock-based television model rather than news. They announced Fox Sports Live is going to go away. They're not going to have a news program. They're bringing in Jason Whitlock. Jamie Horowitz is in from ESPN. It seems like they're going to steal an ESPN phrase, embrace debate. What do you feel about that and kind of the evolution of television and sports television in general?
I'm not sure that you can call that evolution. I think de-evolution might be the closer thing. I agree with what you're saying, and I think it's true. And I think, I mean, all you got to do is turn to what are the popular shows on sports TV that people like? People yelling at each other, people arguing. I mean, I think Tony Kornheiser is my personal hero. I mean, I love Tony Kornheiser, always have. And I think that, pardon the interruption, did it, but they did it right. They kind of did it with, like, tongue-in-cheek, you know, and it's like two guys that really like each other and who really actually know what they're talking about. But I think that the thing that's happened ever since then is this contentious thing. I mean, like, with Skip Bayless, of course, is like the antithesis of this, but the bottom of it. But that's what gets ratings, and you can't blame a network for trying to get ratings. I mean, it's the paper, we do stuff that the story that I did in the last year that got the most hits, and I'm talking about, like, by an order of magnitude, I mean, not even close, was a story I didn't want to do. It was like, they said, do the 5 biggest spoilers in the Star Wars movie. And oh, wow. I was like, well, I don't want to do that. But it turned out, I was thinking about it wrong, I guess. You know? And I think that's what's going on there. And I think I don't know why I like to listen to sports radio, but I do. But it tends to be people, not so much the sports, but it tends to be people that know what they're talking about. And I think it's interesting to listen to people who know what they're talking about. If you want to hear some, listen sometime on Sirius Radio to Entertainment Weekly Radio. And it's like NPR for people with a really low IQ. It's so dumb and so shallow. And people can say that sports is shallow, and maybe it's not the most important thing in the world, but everybody's going to be watching the Super Bowl Sunday. But the thing that you can't say is maybe the topic they're talking about is somewhat shallow, but they know a lot about it. And that's what interests me. And I don't like the fighting and stuff. And I'm not a big fan of Colin Coward and all that stuff. I guess the moral of the entire thing I'm saying is that I'm really old. but that's not true either. I like a lot of the stuff. I just don't like the way, what am I going to learn from that show? What am I going to come out of that show? In a lot of ways, it's the way that political rhetoric has gone on these talk shows. Nobody turns in to learn anything. People tune in to get their point validated. You know, to be the choir that these people preach to. I've always said this when I write about media and politics. If you're a liberal, watch Fox News. If you're a conservative, watch MSNBC. If you're a conservative and you watch Fox News, you're not going to learn anything. All you're going to do is listen to people like you talk about things that you want to hear.
Right.
If you really want to know what's going on, listen to the other side. And there's no place. It's getting to be in sports where there's no place to do that anymore.
Well, it's so true, and it's so much, I want to hear myself talk on the radio. That's what it feels like, whether you're streaming live, whether you're on the radio, whether you're on TV, it's crazy. Well,
what's the big dumb thing I can say that's going to get attention?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we know we'll never get that from you, because you offer great insight, Bill Goody Coons, AZ Central. Check him out on our website, azcentral.com. Also, I got to look up that spoiler story now. I think I didn't read that, so that's pretty good. I'm going to have to check it out. That is it for today. I want to thank everybody for listening and tuning in here with Greg Esposito and Paula Bovin, filling in on the Brad Sesmatt Show here on Sports 360 AZ.